Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun, too. It's a thing, and now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Freddy Krueger here, and you're listening to Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the crew this week in Geek.net.
I am Dracula. I bid you welcome. Listen to them, children of the night. What music they make.
It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
It's alive! Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
Oh, don't hand me that. You're just wasting your time.
The wolf bit you, didn't he?
Science couldn't explain it, but there it was, alive in the deep, deep waters of the Amazon. A throwback to a creature that had existed 100 million years ago, immensely strong and destructive.
I'll show you who I am! And what I am.
Hey guys, what's going on? It is I, Mike the Birdman, and you are listening to This Week in Geek.net. And happy Halloween to all you boys and ghouls. Yes, I'm not able to think of anything more creatively right on the spot. That's just how it is. But of course, I am not alone as I trek through the Transylvanian countryside inside this coffin. That's right. I'm joined by the man in New Berlin.
Alex, the producer.
That's right, guys. So we are here to celebrate Halloween, as we often do here on ThisWeekInGeek.net. We usually do some kind of a Halloween franchise show. As you may have heard, I have teamed up with people like Nerds the Third. We've talked about urban legends and other spooky stories. I've talked about Wendigos and Skinwalkers. We even talked about Unsolved Mysteries a little while ago, both the new series and the old. Rest in peace, Robert Stack. But this show, we're doing something a little bit different. And as you may remember, over the course of Twig history, I've met some interesting people in the media. And one of these people has actually become a friend over a number of years. I first met this guy all the way back in 2007 in Chicago. I first met him face to face. And his name is James Rolfe. And you may more affectionately know him as the Angry Video Game Nerd, previously known as the Angry Nintendo Nerd. And for great many years on ThisWeekInGeek.net, we used to do a series of horror podcasts where me and James and whoever else happened to be on the show, we would talk about various horror movie franchises. We've talked about, I think, the Saw franchise, Aliens, Evil Dead. So without any further ado, I'd love to welcome James Rolfe to the show.
How you doing?
I am doing fantastic. It is fantastic to have you back, James, as we begin to slap a new coat of paint on this old girl. And it's just great to be able to talk horror movies again, because this is something you and I can talk about near endlessly.
Yeah, and, you know what? It's just, yeah, like you said, a lot of memories. You know, I think I met you a couple times in Toronto. So it's great to, you know, talk again. It's been a long time. So
yeah, like you've always been in my life over the years, and I'm very thankful that you've been around just to kind of share in content creation, but also just not be an asshole. So with all that in mind, guys, the three of us are going to sit down and talk about a topic suggested by James, because it's something he's very, very passionate about. We're going to be talking about the Universal monster movies and kind of looking at their history, our experiences with them, and kind of what's worked with these movies, what hasn't worked, why are they not as popular now, considering we have modern special effects, we have wonderful directors, and we have these huge cinematic universes, which Universal did pioneer way back in the day. We've got the DC universe now, we've got the Avengers universe, we have so many cool things interconnected, yet the Universal movies, they tried with the Dark Universe, and fuck Tom Cruise, and... what are we going to do now? So I guess let's start things off with our guest. So James, I know you have been a huge fan of these movies since you were a child. You've got that huge set of all the classic Universal Monster VHSs. So tell the story for my listeners who may not necessarily be familiar with that experience.
Sure. Yeah. And first of all, I want to say, sorry if I repeat anything from last time, because we did a Universal podcast about five years ago. Yes, I don't remember what we talked about then, but this is just sort of like, because Mike reached out to me, and thanks, by the way, for reaching out like way in advance too. Earlier in the year, you got in touch with me, and then I delayed for a long time. I finally got back to you, but then I was like, you know, I'm not gonna have time to watch all the movies, because in the past we had a lot of fun with like the Saw franchise where I watched all the Saw movies in preparation for the podcast. And this time I was like, you know what? This year has just been too crazy. If we can just do something that's like something I already know, like the back of my hand. So I suggested, you know, a few things, and you guys went with Universal. So I'm more than happy to talk Universal and dive deep into it anytime. But yeah, the question about like just how to introduce them to people, or like,
yeah, like what makes classic horror so attractive to people? Because for example, to kind of give you a chance to think about your answer, in preparation for this, I was able to get my hands on a lot of DVDs and Blu-rays for this, and there's a lot. I've watched maybe about 8 of these movies, and some of them I was expecting going in to have this grand, thrilling experience. And I think I set my expectations too high.
They're movies from the 30s and 40s, dude.
But that's the thing, though. The first time I saw Dracula and Frankenstein, I saw it in what could be only described as the most perfect cinematic environment. I remember driving to my local theater. It was the middle of October. It was literally dark. It was foggy. The way that, you know, the streetlights were reflecting in the fog, it was something like out of like Silent Hill. And I saw Dracula and Frankenstein back to back, and I was so enthralled with Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff, and I was so taken in by these movies. And I saw The Mummy, The Mummy's Curse, I think the one where he's in the swamp with his wife. Oh.
So you went straight to The Mummy's Curse?
Yeah, because I didn't know which order to watch these in. And my roommate Shannon told me, hey, this one's really cool. And I'm thinking, I really enjoyed that one. But the original Mummy, I liked parts of it, but I didn't like it as a whole. And as I was going through these movies, I really like The Wolfman. Lon Chaney Jr. was amazing. That movie I couldn't look away from. And normally, people in this era of smartphones and Facebook, you're always doing something else while watching these movies. Alex, to tell you, I'm bad for that.
you are the king of having the phone out the whole time. That being said, you know, some of them, you know, are a little harder. If you're not used to watching older films, it can be hard to get in. It's not so much the visuals, because they've done a really good job of cleaning them up. It's that tin can AM radio sounding audio that is sometimes hard to get into if you're not used to it.
It's also really worth noting that the ones in the early 30s tended to not have any music in them, which in a lot of ways made them a lot creepier, especially Dracula, where there's like a lot of dead air. Frankenstein has a lot of sound of thunder and storm that's going on, so you don't really notice as much. But like the ones in the, once they got into the mid-30s and then into the 40s, there was music all the time. So it's worth noting for a newcomer that there were two phases of Universal horrors. Like mainly it was from 1931 to 1936, I think. And then they picked up again in 39 and then to like 45 or 46. So it was kind of like these two phases. And the later phase was a little more energetic. It had more more action in them. They would tend to have, like, you know, the castles would be exploding all the time, and there'd always be the villagers chasing the monsters, and they really just, like, they kind of went with all the cliches but amped them up and made it a little more exciting. So it can be viewed as the ones in the 40s are a little cheaper because they're going more for, like, just quick entertainment, and the ones from the 30s were more gritty and creepy. Because by the 40s, people were going to see this more for fun. Like, you know, World War II was going on, and this was just like an escape, you know, into a fantasy. People weren't really afraid of them as much, I don't think, at that point. So it's worth noting that it's very two distinct flavors in the Universal cycles.
Well, yeah. Those early ones are in, like, the early talkie era too. So,
yeah,
you know, you'd only really had talking pictures for, what, 3 or 4 years before Dracula came out. So,
yeah, and Dracula was based on a play. Like, it was literally the stage play, which Bela Lugosi played in. He played Dracula like 1,000 times on stage before the movie. And Edward Van Sloan played Van Helsing. He was on the stage show too. And they basically just adapted that stage show for the movie. And that's why it's very stagey. It's very talky. The way it's set up is, you know, like a play.
Yeah. And that sort of brings into the whole early talkie thing. That's sort of what they did when they first started making talking pictures, where prior to that, you had all the pantomiming of, like, Nosferatu and all the German expressionist stuff. So I guess you're right. Like, there's that first phase of, hey, look, we can talk on film.
Yeah.
And then there was, hey, look, we can actually make it fast moving.
Yeah. And arguably, I mean, I think the first movie that really did that, it wasn't a Universal movie, was King Kong in 1933. That was the first, that's one of the earliest movies I can think of that was on such an epic scale with so much going on that had a full musical score, like a score that wasn't just laid in there. It was actually like mimicking the action on screen, you know? And where they had all that sound design, all the different kind of roars, like they had to invent, what does the T-Rex sound like? What does Kong sound like? And it has this full sound design and special effects. Like, I feel like King Kong was kind of like the one that broke away from that early talky kind of awkwardness.
So it's sort of like the Jaws of its era, right? Where it, like, changed the way.
Yeah.
Big blockbusters were done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I see in the list, they sometimes list The Phantom of the Opera, the 1925 silent version.
You know what? Arguably,
does it count?
That's a really good conversation, because it's kind of debatable what do you count as the Universal monsters. And I do think that Phantom of the Opera is one of them. But it occurred earlier during the silent era. So it's not like from the same era, but it is a very iconic monster. And it's worth noting that there's two Phantoms that Universal made, and the one that they include on all the, you know, the Blu-rays and everything is the 1943 version, which I don't think is anywhere near as good. It's also the only one they made in color during that phase, which is kind of cool, but the Phantom that you think about is Lon Chaney from 1925.
Yeah.
So I feel like Universal doesn't really want to promote the silent one as much because it's public domain. And if they want to release that one, they want to be the only one to release it. And since they can't, they basically just use the one from 1943, which makes sense because it's from that era, but it's not the famous Phantom that I think of.
Yeah, I watched that one as part of my watch through of these, and I'll say one thing, the Technicolor still really pops. So,
the masquerade, like, scene?
Yeah, like, so in the 40s, you know, you really started getting it with, like, Wizard of Oz, but in the 40s is when they perfected that, like, hyper-saturated, like, I can only imagine
how... Oh, yeah, you're talking about the color version. I thought you meant there's a color scene in the original Phantom, but it's only one scene.
Oh no, I'm talking about the 1940s version, the Technicolor.
Yeah,
version.
I mean, it does look amazing. It's and they use the same set from the the original fan, which that set stood on the stage for in that studio for 80 years.
And oh, they wow.
demolished it.
back before they decided to destroy everything to make room.
Exactly. I think they destroyed it for a Harry Potter ride, and it was the oldest standing set in history. Yeah.
And most of those, even those Western sets are almost all gone now too from back then. So.
Oh, probably. Yeah. It seemed like everything went away eventually. I mean, that's a whole other story, but like the Court of Miracles, which they say is from, it was originally there since Hunchback of Notre Dame in 1923. It's not the same thing. It seems like that whole European village that they used a lot in those movies, it burned down and like, oh gee, I don't know. I mean, there's somebody who knows. I mean, for sure. I think like Tom Weaver would know. If you check out the classic horror film board, I forget the URL off the top of my head, but there's a lot of experts who would know how long that lasted.
Now, as one last thing from that early period, my experience with it, Dracula and Frankenstein, I had seen, I think, on TV or VHS as a kid. But I went to see a bunch of double features when my local theater was doing like the remasters, 10 years ago, maybe more?
Oh, cool.
Yeah, something like that.
That's where I saw a double feature of the Mummy and the Mummy and the Wolfman together. And I think they also paired, weirdly enough, they paired the Spanish Dracula, which I didn't know existed at the time.
Oh, it's amazing.
I was like, this is strange. Why am I getting like a weird deja vu, but it's not right.
Yeah.
they paired that and with Dial M for Murder in colorized in 3D.
Oh,
and I was like, great movie, that was a weird, it was sort of like, I think whatever the theater could find to put together.
Oh, okay.
And they also did in that same series, House of Wax and something else. Was it House of?
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
House of Wax and like House on Haunted Hill or something together. So it was a whole bunch in like a 1 week spread that I went and saw.
There's a lot of good ones.
Yeah, and out of the bunch, I think the Wolfman was my favorite out of that early of like the introduction of all the characters.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's one of my favorites too.
And before this, I had never seen the original Invisible Man movie except for like the couple little scenes that had popped up online. That was
oh, nice. Sweet. Cool.
Yeah. Now, looking at all these movies that all of us have had experiences with, what do you think attracts you to these movies as a modern film goer? With me, it was the charisma of some of these actors, like Bela Lugosi as Dracula. You can't take your eyes off of that guy. He commands every scene that he's in. And I haven't seen many actors pull that off. And I will fully admit, I'm very ignorant of a lot of early movies before 1950. I just haven't seen a lot. Mm-hmm. And then when I saw The Wolfman this past week with Lon Chaney Jr., again, magnetic. And it's just something that I didn't expect a movie made in that era to take me the way that it did. And I think that says something to the power of the director to get the performances from these actors, but also the strength of the actors themselves. So James, when you first got into Universal Horror, what was it about these movies that attracted you and obviously influenced you throughout your career and basically fandom for these things.
Yeah. Well, I figured out what it is, I think, actually. I think I really got down to the appeal, just that they're great fantasy stories. And I actually put out a video, I think, by the time this podcast comes out, it'll probably be after the video. I'm not sure. But around the same time, I'm posting a video that's about why the classic monsters are like superheroes. I think it's the same reason why superheroes are very popular, is because they're just great fantasy stories. Because these type of monsters we're talking about aren't so much horror. I think the modern sensibility of horror is, you know, a killer with a knife, some crazy poltergeist or something, or, you know, zombies. Like, it's got to be something more more terrifying. So I don't think it's never been that these movies are scary. I mean, maybe they were scary in the early 30s for a little while, but I think the reason they're appealing is because of the stories, and they draw a lot of parallels with superheroes. I mean, Stan Lee himself, you know, was inspired by these movies. You know, he said that the Hulk was inspired by the Frankenstein monster, who also shares a lot of similar traits to Jekyll and Hyde. But there's a lot of things, and you guys could help me out with this too, because, you guys obviously know superheroes, that there's always the scene where the hero obtains the power. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Peter Parker gets bitten by a radioactive spider. He becomes Spider-Man. Larry Talbot gets bitten by a wolf. He becomes the Wolfman. And then it's always about, well, what do you do with this now? And even though the Wolfman's kind of like a villain, he also has this noble side to him where he's trying to protect the people around him. And he's trying to do the responsible thing.
Yeah, totally.
I didn't expect him to be so sympathetic.
Yeah, well, I'll say that too. But firstly, what appeals to me nowadays is seeing how they built the sets, how they did the map paintings, how there's a certain aesthetic and feel to it that isn't replicated today anymore. Even when people try to spoof it or do it again, you'd have to go back to filming on a 16 or 35 millimeter black and white. Because giving it the effect using digital isn't the same. Yeah. And just the matte paintings mixed with miniatures. I think what would have scared people back in the day was just seeing the transformations into the bat. Or mm-hmm. seeing the transformation into the Wolfman. That was, you know, this is a world predating anything like The Exorcist. Or anything that was done with the practical effects of the 70s and 80s, right? So it was... probably, if you hadn't been somebody that watched a lot of German horror, you probably had never seen anything that gothic or dramatic or scary. So that would have been scary, I guess, for the time. Now, as far as getting the powers and everything, I see that. And I was surprised as a kid, I didn't know that these movies were eventually connected together. And you wouldn't have thought, like Michael said, that the Wolfman would end up being the protagonist. That, like, is yeah. trying to literally help everybody.
Have you guys seen all the mashup ones?
I ended up in my watch through, I was like, what should I go with? I should go with something. I figured I'd watch the beginning ones that I hadn't seen. And then I wanted to go with the last few films. Because I had seen Creature from the Black Lagoon in theaters, I think 2 years ago when they did like mm-hmm. a big remaster. But I was like, okay, I got to see, what did I watch? I watched the House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula, and then the Abbott and Costello movies.
Have you seen Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman?
That one I think I missed.
Oh, that's the best one. That's the one that got me into them. I would recommend for anyone starting who hasn't seen any that Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman seems to it was the first time they ever put two monsters into one movie. And they got it right the first time, where they gave, you know, a good amount of attention to each monster, and they made them meet up in a way that's believable enough. And it starts off with a really great cemetery scene, and it ends with a really great fight between the two monsters. And it's really the only time that they both actually fight. I mean, they kind of do in Abbott and Costello, like toward the end, but this one's just like a flat out versus movie.
Now, just out of curiosity, James, because you're obviously more of an expert than either me or Alex, do you know what was the impetus to make this movie happen? Because I can't imagine a versus movie back then was a conversation that would come up very often. Like, do you know if there's any behind the scenes stories with this?
There's a good book called Universal Horrors by Tom Weaver and I'm blanking on the other author, but there's two authors on it. That would definitely give all the details. From what I remember, because I have read it, it was basically just like the first time they ever did it, and they were trying to do other ones too. Like they were going to do like Wolfman versus Dracula and stuff like that. And there is a script for it, which is kind of weird.
Ooh.
It's a whole other story, but it kind of made for the best that they didn't make that one. I can't think of any other example of movies that used to do that kind of thing back then, because it is very similar to what they'd eventually do in the Godzilla movies and then in the Marvel films. And nobody really got it right until Marvel did it. Because they had this very loose continuity. Because back then, you know, nobody had home video. It was just, you see the movie in the theater, it leaves the theater, you forget about it, and then a couple years later, another one comes out. So they didn't really care. But what's funny is that they sort of have continuity. They'll pick up on a few elements, but then they'll disregard some other stuff. Which is where the fun really starts, because then you could get into all kinds of theories and, you know, I like to creatively try to connect the movies together in ways that make sense. Once they got to House of Frankenstein, which is also really fascinating, a lot of fun, but they do have a lot of things in it that are kind of awkward, you know, where Dracula's in the movie, but they couldn't figure out how to get Dracula in there with the other monsters. So they pretty much have Dracula killed like 20 minutes in. And then the rest of the movie is about the Wolfman, and then the monster finally gets up in the last act. But I mean, they're a lot of fun.
So looking at these characters, because obviously these characters have been around for generations at this point, what do you think is the strength that the Universal monsters carry forth into today's cinema? As you said, they're wonderful stories, they're great characters, but do they matter as much today as maybe they should? And the main reason I bring this up is I was watching Fred Dekker's The Monster Squad from 1987, I want to say it was. And for those of you that don't know about this movie, it's basically the Goonies, but with the Universal monsters, and they fight. And it's fucking fantastic because the Wolfman has nards. and it's one of these things. I wondered why this has never been more successful. Is like I mentioned during the intro to the show, we have all these talented directors and writers and producers and special effects. Where are these monsters now? Because I was talking with Alex before the show started, like you look at the idea of Frankenstein's monster, if you took that into genetics and stem cells and bio research of whatever stuff I clearly is above my friggin' pay grade, you could create a modern day Frankenstein and have it work. Cause I know last year there was the Invisible Woman, or the Invisible Man rather, and they turned him into a technological bad guy with a suit like the Predator or whatever. And then there was Hollow Man that came out in the early 2000s and that worked.
Yeah. Actually, I liked Hollow Man too. But it's so weird that of all those movies, the Invisible Man is the only one that never gets remade, even though they called, you know, the newest one, the Invisible Man. And it was really good, but it's not the Invisible Man story. It's not Jack Griffin. It's a completely different story. It's such a weird thing. Like I'm wondering, like, is it impossible to get the rights to the H.G. Wells novel? Like, why can't they?
Maybe it's because so many like TV movies and knockoff direct-to-video things have been made on them. Yeah, it's not public domain yet, is it? Like,
I would think it would be.
Yeah, I would think, but I don't know.
So sure. Maybe it's that. But what I would love is, we know that the Dark Universe thing, they tried it. Was it the Dracula movie tanked? Nobody even knew it existed. Dracula Unbound or something. Yeah, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But the
Mummy was awful, but it was
so dark, and by Dark Universe, it was not dark as in tone. It was so dark it was hard to see in the theater. Now, out of all of those, the only one that would have worked is that Wolfman remake was actually pretty good.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. Well, I think they're going about it the wrong way. Like, I think they're kind of missing that point. Yeah. That it's just these are great fantasy stories and you could really do anything with them. They don't have to be horror. They could be horror, that you could make them scary, but I don't think that's necessary. You brought up the Monster Squad. I think that is the best way to go, because people love movies where kids are the stars. Stranger Things is extremely popular. And you know, they made those It movies again. I think they did well.
Yeah.
It's like, why not make a movie where the kids are the stars and you have the monsters all drop in and basically remake Monster Squad? I mean, it's not going to be I'm not opposed. I am not opposed to a remake of Monster Squad, because it's going to be a different generation. You know, I think that's the best way to bring the monsters back is with comedy.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I would personally love if they went one of two ways. One, and both versions that I'm going to present here, I think, to really hit home, because they want to go with, these are classic movies, these are what started most horror. You know, they're approaching, in some cases, 100 years on some of them, or getting there. Why not either shoot them in full screen for theatrical presentation and make them black and white? Make them, like, mm-hmm. not shot for shot, but why not just make a, like, super high quality, you know, black and white films to sort of pay homage, or again, filming in the original aspect, go full Technicolor. And I mean, break out the old Technicolor, shoot them on film so they're not digital, remake, like, do sets, design the sets, and they don't have to be elaborate, realistic looking sets. Make them look like they would have looked when they were made in the 30s, and go like the, like, new retro look, instead of this dark, you know, everything is muted to almost black and white anyway, universe that's just copying, hey, let's do what Batman did. And why don't they go a different way and just make it super colorful and, like, an homage to classic filmmaking?
Yeah, I thought about that, like, to make it just seem like it's another Universal movie that you missed, like a lost one that they found. There actually is a movie that the closest I've seen where someone tried to do that. It was called House of the Wolfman, and it was basically meant to, like, pick up after those movies. And it's an independent film, so obviously I want to go easy on it. I think they did a really good job with the set and with everything to make it look like it was one of those movies. It's in black and white, and it looks great. They got Lon Chaney, who I think is the grandson of Lon Chaney Jr. The only thing wrong with it really is that you don't see the monsters until, like, the last 10 or maybe even 5 minutes up from the end of the film. So it's like you wait the whole time to see them. When you do see them, they look great. But I think maybe the movie would have worked better as a short film with just having the monsters in it, or call the movie something different and have the monsters be a surprise at the end. It's worth checking out, though, because it definitely is aiming for what you just said.
There was something, James, that you did in an earlier video a couple of years ago, and you were talking about the Invisible Man series on Monster Madness. Yeah. And I think this idea could be mined, because it's such an interesting idea, where a World War II agent fights Nazis, but he's an invisible person.
Oh, like the invisible agent?
Yeah, if you could bring that and maybe have the invisible agent happen during, say, I don't know, the Cold War or something like that. Like, you could make that awesome.
Wasn't the Invisible Man TV show that ran on like the Sci-Fi Network similar? This guy's early 2000s. Dude was recruited to work for a secret government agency where he goes invisible to, like, it was sort of like Stargate or MacGyver or any of those types of shows. I remember that, and they always seem to go the sci-fi route with them. But I see what you mean, Michael. Like, setting it, you know, maybe Cold War. You got to set it in something, some sort of iconic time period.
I mean, so maybe,
just so everybody knows, the Invisible Agent exists, but it's World War II. We're talking about if they did another one in another war, time period.
Yeah, because I think that idea is fascinating, and taking the Invisible Man character and putting it in something else would be really awesome. Another thing I'd love to see them do is, I saw the Creature from the Black Lagoon, and this is probably blasphemy, I didn't much care for the movie, but I love the plot, I love the setup, and the special effects are second to none. I think
you could actually see 3D on the Blu-ray.
Like, I think if they made that movie now and kept it virtually the same, it would be really, really good.
Didn't we sort of already get it and didn't like win Shape the of Oscars?
But
Shape of Water Angels. Yeah, and both of those won awards. So
yeah,
like, welcome back to Creature.
Yeah, like, I think there's something about making, I mean, Shape of Water was a love story from what I understand. I haven't seen it.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
But maybe taking the idea of the Gill Man or the Creature and maybe making it an expedition to the Amazon or somewhere in the heart of Africa, and maybe kind of playing up that idea, could be really, really fascinating. And you could have all sorts of cool science-y gadgets with, you know, satellites and everything. I think could do something cool with it.
Yeah, there are modern or modern-ish films that have a similar feel or aesthetic to them. You know, some are way more critically praised than others, but like, I've always felt that like the Hellboy movies, as far as, you know, even though they're comic book movies, had a similar sort of universal feel. I may be the only person on the planet that likes League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I thought it was an interesting idea that they just didn't do much with.
Yeah, I haven't seen it actually. I mean, I've seen parts of it but never the whole
thing. It's worth a watch because it's sort of that team up of all the 1800s, early 1900s folklore characters from different books. You got Dorian Gray, Alan Quartermain, a bunch of other people, Jekyll and Hyde. You've got that, and we were talking before we were recording with you, James. Michael and I both like Van Helsing. It's objectively a bad movie with hammy acting, but I always enjoyed it.
It's basically it's basically like the millennium version of like House of Frankenstein.
Yeah, so I mean, don't necessarily go that hammy or you know, the CGI was sort of limited at the time, but if you know, sort of took that design, mixed it with, like, what was that movie, Brothers Grimm?
Yeah,
that sort of aesthetic. And if you made that now and made a Monster Squad, you could make it pretty good.
And you know, I felt that way, like, when I saw Van Helsing in the theater and I really enjoyed it. I have the feeling if I watch it today, it would probably be very dated now.
The Dracula acting and some of the CG was really rough, but other than that,
but I remember, like, it opened in black and white, and they were paying homage to the Universal movies. I think they even made a point to shoot some of it on the Universal backlot somewhere. So it was, it kind of felt like, okay, this is the modern day version. This is actually like a modern Universal monster movie. And we're going to get one of these every 10 years or so. Right. But no, we got nothing. Like, but yeah, I feel like if you were to ask me, what do I want to see happen? There's a lot of things that could happen. I'd like to see an actual, adaption of H.G. Wells, The Invisible Man, and go further than, you know, they did the 1933 version, which was great, but they didn't, you know, a lot of times they would abridge it a lot. So I would like to see a good adaptation of that. A thorough adaptation of Dracula, which surprisingly, of all the Dracula movies ever made, nobody's ever done the book, like just done the book like verbatim. I would say do it as a Netflix series, which they actually did make a Netflix Dracula series like early this year, but it has nothing to do with, it's different yet again. I'd like to see the Monster Squad remake of some kind, something in that vein. And then something black and white, but something that we haven't seen, like The Mummy versus The Invisible Man, some combination that they never did.
I think Invisible Man versus like Jekyll and Hyde would be cool.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Now we're also forgetting that, you know, in the Brendan Fraser Mummy movies, for what they were fun.
Yeah,
And then with, I'm looking at that reboot era they're calling it, and you know, some of them are, the Dark Universe are either canceled or the movies are still in development, but they won't be connected. But they had like, what was it, Dracula Untold, The Mummy, Invisible Man. They're still technically counting that as part of it. Dark Army, Renfield, Frankenstein, Invisible Woman, Monster Mash. Really? Maybe that's going to be like Monster Squad.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Bride of Frankenstein, then a new Dracula, The Wolfman, which, okay.
So are we in like 2030 yet? Like,
yeah, we're pretty much an untitled Invisible Man sequels at the bottom. I think the plan would have been that these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, these 10 films probably would have been coming out over the next 5 to 6 years.
So they wanted to lay the groundwork for their own expanded universe, but obviously it didn't come to fruition because of poor planning. Nobody cared. And that's kind of a tragedy. Really,
it wasn't that. It was they went, let's copy DC, and then the DC movies until recently weren't very good. So
it was just like a very confused movie that didn't know what it wanted to be. Like the Mummy, it was like especially the way they ended it, the way it kind of teased another movie, but it didn't tease any of the other monsters. It just had Tom Cruise turning into some kind of mummy zombie hybrid or whatever the hell he was turning into. And then, you know, like if this were a Marvel movie, you would see a hint that, you know, you'd see the Hulk at the end or something and you'd know what's coming next. But this time it didn't really know what it was teasing at. And I don't know. It was just, the whole thing was just so strange.
Yeah. It could have been, handled a lot better. I think the muted color palette, it looked like too many other movies that were coming out. It also had the feeling like the design aesthetic was, let's take a 90s movie and then just mute the colors. And that wasn't what people really wanted, I don't think. Plus, if they're calling it Dark Universe, wouldn't it have to be like a hard R rating for everything? But instead we got CG. So,
I mean,
it is what it is. I am interested to see what that Monster Mash movie would be, if it's still going to come out. I wonder if they're going to go more with, like, if they do either reboot these again or try to, you know, make a connected universe, should they just have, you know, the people that did the Invisible Man movie, was that, so was Universal put that out?
Was that Blumhouse who got involved with that one?
Productions. Yeah. Why don't they just get them to do it all? Because they can do it low budget. It doesn't, showing that it doesn't have to be these like CGI extravaganzas. You know, if you're going to do another Wolfman instead of CGI, give us something more physical or more, you know, along
more the practical effects.
More like American Werewolf in London or something.
Oh, you know what? Have you guys seen the Hotel Transylvania movies?
With Adam Sandler?
Yeah, they're good. I think that's kind of like, I mean, that's just an example. That's like a good take on, like a good modern take where it's just full comedy. It's nothing, you know, serious, and it's kid friendly. Like my kids, you know, ask to watch those movies all the time. I think one day we watched all three of them in a row. We had a marathon. Yeah, I mean, they're just
not hard when kids' movies are only an hour and 15 or hour and 20 minutes. So it's not too bad.
They tend to be shorter. Yeah, it helps. But yeah, they're a lot of fun because it has all the monsters in there. There exists some kind of representation of each of the monsters. They even have like the Blob, and I think the Fly is in there, like stuff like that. There's a lot of references, and it actually kind of reminds me of there's a stop motion movie by Rankin Bass called a Mad Monster Party from the 60s. They had Boris Karloff doing the voice of the scientist, and it's kind of the same concept where all the monsters get together and have a party, and you just can't go wrong with that. There's also a Monster Squad TV series, believe it or not, it was in like the 70s, I think. And it's
the funny thing is, I told Michael I've never seen Monster Squad or what was the other Fred Dekker movie?
Night of the Creeps.
I haven't seen either of them, but as a kid, I saw that in reruns, the 70s show, and I thought that's what it was. I thought it was like that or a movie adaptation of that, not realizing they are wildly different.
Oh yeah, like completely unrelated. It was actually made, the Monster Squad series was made by the makers of the 66 Batman series.
Oh, wow.
And it kind of has the same vibe where the monsters are kind of like heroes, and then they have to fight a villain, and the villain will be something ridiculous, like a bumblebee or something. It's like somebody in a bee costume.
Very close to the, like, was it Filmation Ghostbusters?
Yeah. A lot of people forget about that or you know, don't even know about it.
That gorilla was awesome.
It's very similar to that. Or as if you were a Canadian kid, or if you were somebody near the border that could pick up CHCH Hamilton's giant antenna, for like 30 years, we had reruns of The Hilarious House of Frightenstein.
I mean, I never saw on TV, but I have the DVD of it. And
when I say... The show, they filmed like over 100 some odd episodes over the course of 1 year and then released it in like 20 episode seasons. So they recorded the whole show in 1971 and then continued to air it on regular TV and cable almost every day for kids for like till like 2002 or something. It was ridiculous. So everybody here grew up on that, and that had Vincent Price, where they filmed apparently all of his scenes in the span of, I think it was a weekend or two, all his rhymes, God, and all his introductions. Yeah. They had him for a weekend, brought him up to like Niagara Falls, shot the whole thing. And then he was done. But what made me think of that was at the end of, it was one of the mashups. Was it the Abbott and Costello one? It sounded like he was going to play a version of the Invisible Man because he's voicing a character at the end of it. And then they tease Vincent Price being in it, and then he doesn't.
Abbott and Costello meet the Invisible Man.
But it's not him.
Yeah, I mean, he played the Invisible Man in The Invisible Man Returns, which is, you know, Vincent Price, you know, in voice most of the time.
Yeah.
But the Abbott and Costello one, where they actually did make the Invisible Man, is really funny. I think it's actually funnier than the Frankenstein one.
Well, and it felt more like, it sounds weird, it was like an extended Three Stooges movie.
Yeah. I'd be interested if they would remake something like Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, but use today's comedians.
Now, who would you cast in that? Because I was actually thinking about that today, and I had a terrible idea, which I'm sure somebody will come at me in the comments. Okay. So Adam Sandler has made a deal with Netflix.
Done. Have you tried to see any of the trailers for his? He still talks with the stupid voice that he's like 60.
Which movie?
He did. he just did one called Hubie Halloween.
Yes, yes. I saw it. I saw it last night.
Oh, good Lord.
You know what? Believe it or not, oh, man, I got a kick out of it because I was like, okay, this is Adam Sandler doing the same thing, going back to, like, you know, this is like Billy Madison era Adam Sandler. And it's funny, and
it looks so amateurish, but yeah, I'll give it a watch, I guess.
Well, the thing that surprised me the most, my biggest takeaway from it was, it had the best Halloween scenery that I've seen since Trick or Treat.
Oh, where, like, wow!
Yeah, like, I mean, don't expect it to be that level, but it's like, you know, there's so much night photography in the neighborhood where you're just seeing all the decorations, and there's just this orange glow coming from everywhere. There's a scene I remember, they're driving through a cornfield and there's like a layer of fog and you see the full moon behind them. And I'm like, for a movie this dumb, it does not need to look this good.
Now, okay, so let's cast one. Each of us gets to cast one person, and then James, you come up with the plot, and then we'll kind of wrap this up. Okay, so I'm casting Adam Sandler in this movie. He's going to play one of the Abbott and Costello types. Alex, who do you pick to star opposite him?
Well, I mean, is it going to have to, if it's somebody that's from his repertoire, you have to cast Kevin James or somebody to play the partner?
He can play a supporting role or somebody completely different. You can cast anybody you want, living or dead.
See, I would have said this, had this been 10 years ago, this would have been, they would have cast Franco and Rogan to do all these movies if they're doing remakes. But if you're going with Adam Sandler, so it's Sandler playing one of the comedians that's going to be in this.
Yeah,
let's go. The other comedian
can be anybody, can be crass, can be super not, can be super over the top, or super low key.
So they're not trying to be Abbott and Costello, is
no,
what you're saying.
They're not trying to be Abbott and Costello, but we're putting him in the same kind of goofy kind of setup.
So is this like a team of three? Like three big comedians? Okay.
Yeah, three big comedians.
Okay. Okay. You want to really throw a wrench in there? I put Dave Chappelle in.
Okay.
I was just going to say Dave Chappelle. That's amazing.
Have fun.
Well, then I'll go Jim Carrey.
Okay. All right.
That would be money.
Okay.
Those three.
So Adam Sandler, Dave Chappelle, maybe Jim Carrey.
Or maybe get rid of Adam Sandler and throw in, I don't know. Actually, you know what?
Patton Oswalt.
You know, I can tell you right now who they would throw in to make, legitimately, if they were going to remake these movies.
The Rock.
It would be The Rock and what's his name? He's done a bunch of movies with him already.
Kevin, the little guy?
Kevin Hart, yeah.
Yeah, Kevin. Called him the little guy.
I didn't want to say anything. I'm like, the short dude. It would be them. No, but if you wanted to go as far as...
You know what? I just thought that you need a straight man, though. Like one who's like, you know, Abbott was called the straight man because he wouldn't be... He wasn't funny. He would let Costello be the funny one. So he needed somebody to play off. So who would be the straight man to just bounce the jokes off?
Rain Wilson? Man? I don't know.
No, if you want to go pure straight man, like you could go. Well, okay, if you want to have somebody who maybe has the sarcastic comebacks, and he's already worked with Chappelle, you could throw in Norm Macdonald.
Okay, but
is he going to bring people in? No, to watch. You could go
Bill Burr.
You could go again. It's going to be somebody who has to play it completely straight. You might want to go with somebody who's only really known for doing dramas, right? Like, so, I don't know, throw in, or, you know what? Somebody who can play comedic or that, throw in Tom Hanks. Maybe Tom Hanks and Jack Black.
Mm.
That could be interesting, actually. Yeah. I could see that working. Okay.
Yeah.
So now we have these three comedians. What is the story?
Oh, good Lord. Now, do you want this to be the mashup of everything?
Yeah, like, okay, so we've got these three people.
Oh.
And here's the story I'll pitch super, super simple, and we'll make it funny. Okay. There is a new... there's a new library opening in Arkham, Massachusetts. It's the Miskatonic University. So I'm obviously going for the Lovecraft angle here.
Okay.
And they find a mysterious book, and this book has the power to bring literary characters to life. But the kid who finds this book is really fascinated with monster movies, and he wants to bring new friends into his life. So he's like, oh man, I read about all these classic movie monsters, right? So he reanimates and summons these versions of classic movie monsters. And then these three comedians have to help save the town from Dracula, Frankenstein, and I don't know, the Wolfman.
Okay. I'll do you one better.
Okay.
It's all these classic monsters, but you make it in a pseudo remake or in the style of Last Action Hero. Okay. So the monsters come out of the cinemas. So like they come, or you could make it so that that you have to fight them or travel into their world. So to stop each of the monsters, you have to hop into the film that they were in. And they do that sort of, think a little like Forrest Gump, where they would like put people into old footage.
Mm-hmm.
You could have them doing it that way, or you said, Michael, so it's a kid that wants these friends and they all come to life and come in.
And maybe they don't know that they are bad guys.
The bad guys don't know they're bad guys?
Yeah, they have no clue. Like, why are people scared of us? And the comedian's like, that's a fucking vampire.
Okay, so you want to go that route. Okay. Yeah.
I'm throwing all sorts of curveballs here, people.
Yeah. I don't know how you would... like, I would say... would you cast these famous actors as the parents of, like... so maybe go that route that you were talking about, James, of having the Stranger Things thing. Maybe it's a group of kids that get together to watch these, like, they're outcast nerds, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And they watch horror movies together. And they just, like, they're bullied or whatever. And they wish that, like, these monsters could come to life, or they would be, you know, around them all the time because they love these old films. And have the famous people play their parents.
Yeah.
All right.
And maybe the parents get kidnapped by the, you know, and then this is how you make your monster squad.
Or what about the kids have like a science fair at their school, and these kids are all like, they just happen to be like geniuses, and one of them is developing like an invisibility potion, and then the other one is trying to like bring life to the dead, and they're all doing all the different things that create the monsters.
And okay, it's the
kids' fault that they keep making these monsters, and the parents got to get them under control, you know. And like all the humor, just like, oh, those damn kids are making those monsters all the time. So I don't know. That's just
fun. So like one kid finds like a stray husky, but it turns out it's actually a werewolf.
Yeah, yeah.
So and Hollywood
it turns into like a person every time when during the day it like turns into a person, and because the science fair is that day. They never get to see the werewolf. It's always just like they think that they just have somebody locked in a cage.
Oh. So the whole point is they find this book, like you said, Michael, or
something.
They bring them all to life to show off how much they love them, like as like a not show and tell, but like it's a
we have cool friends now sort of thing.
Yeah, presentation. And they all bring them. So like everybody thinks it's all BS because like the Invisible Man is like, just you can't see him and he's in this box.
Yeah, but they're actually geniuses. Like that all the projects are successful. It's just that you can't see it. Like nobody knows.
Yeah. I mean, or you could do it the modern technology way and make it so that these kids, you know, they are computer geniuses. They've made this like video game, virtual reality game where all the classic monsters are in it. And then lightning strikes and crazy stuff happens and they come to life a la like Weird Science.
Yeah.
So Hollywood, if you are listening, we have ideas and we have a casting list for you.
They're stupid ideas and they're a hell of a lot better than what The Mummy with Tom Cruise ended up being.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
All right, guys. So we are going to wrap things up here on thisweekingeek.net. Big thanks to everybody who has stuck with our rambling over the course of the last hour. So coming up on the show over the next few weeks, me and Alex will be taking a look at the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X. We already have software. By the time this episode airs, we should have software in hand. Otherwise, we are working with developers to get out reviews as soon as we possibly can. This has been the most stressful time in, honestly, my gaming career. I'm pretty sure I've got gray hair because of this stupid thing. My God, pre-ordering an Xbox Series X was hell. So we're going to be talking about that. We also have Fools Who Ride will be premiering with us with Nerds of the Third Power, where Alex joins us as a player character. So we'll once again be returning to the lands of Faerun with Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, which is our D&D actual play podcast. We will also be covering games like Cyberpunk, Call of Duty Black Ops, Cold War, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Cyberpunk 2077, a lot of good stuff. I should be reviewing the RPG as well. But James, before we let you go, what can people look forward to for Cinemasker for the rest of 2020?
Let's see. Well, the biggest thing I probably just got out of the way, which I mean, isn't, you know, that huge of a project, but it was just something that took a long time, was a short horror film. I think will be out by the time this podcast comes out. It's basically a sequel to a movie I made 20 years ago. The first one was called The Head Incident. It's about this murderous ventriloquist dummy head that floats around and kills people. So I decided, nice. Like, how funny would it be to make a sequel to it using like all the technology from, you know, with green screen and stuff from 20 years later. So, you know, got some of the old cast together, and it's been difficult because, you know, we started filming in late 2019, but then after COVID, had to change the script around a lot. So it became a completely solo quarantine project by that point. But it is finally done, slowly chipping away at it over the past year, but it's done now. And it's called The Head Returns. So check that out.
All right. Fantastic. And as always, you'll be posting up new Angry Video Game Nerd content up on your YouTube channel up until the end of the year and beyond that, I assume.
Yeah, definitely. We're trying. We're hanging in there and we're still making it work.
Awesome. So Alex, I guess you and me, as I did mention, those are the projects we're working on. Like I said, we should have a new coat of paint on this old girl rather soon. So be looking forward to that. I'm definitely looking forward to having something new and shiny. So I guess for thisweekingeek.net, my co-host has been
Alex, the producer,
my esteemed special guest.
Hey, it's James.
And I've been Mike, the Birdman, saying, be excellent to each other and have yourself a safe and socially distanced Halloween. We'll catch you guys again next time right here on thisweekingeek.net.
At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought.
Thanks for listening to this episode of This Week in Geek. Hungry for more? Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net. You can subscribe to the podcast, browse our Twitter and Instagram, and leave your thoughts on today's topics. If you'd like to give us some feedback, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. Tune in next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Thank you for your cooperation. Good night.